From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. We are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And I've been saying that, I think it's coming up on 10 years, and I'm still saying it, but it feels like it's happening. And part of the reason it's happening is because of the leadership of Sacramento. We really have strong leaderships in the Sacramento region. And today on the show, we're going to profile one of those leaders. And I'm really proud to do that. She was on the show, I think, the first time, the first year of the show. I had Krista Bernasconi, the mayor of Roseville, on our show. She also owns Market Share PR. She's got a beautiful family. She's fit. Who says you can't have it all? You got the whole package, Krista. And welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So I think when we started the show, the reason why I wanted to start it is because I wanted to provide, I guess, the information for others about people who win, people who are successful in their life and in building businesses and elsewhere. But, you know, a lot of times we can't imagine, you know, how to think so big. Sometimes we can't imagine what it takes to actually get there. So today I want to kind of dive into that, some of that stuff. Maybe though, before we get into that, just so people can get to know you a little bit, I described you. How do you describe yourself? Maybe a little of your background.
Okay, thank you for that. I describe myself as hometown girl. I was saying you and I have a lot in common, but I'm a Roseville native. Sometimes I say I didn't get very far. Five generations of my family have called Roseville home. There's nowhere else that I would want to be or serve or have my business. And I just feel like I have maybe some strong habits that might set me apart from others, but I feel like I'm just kind of like everyone else. And I don't know what else to say other than I just try to keep it positive and be of service to others and leave things better than you found them.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I've been impressed with you since I first met you. It must have been about 10 years ago when you came on the show, and I've seen, you know, your family. You have twins that are now seniors in high school, you were telling me, which is blows me away. You obviously have a successful business. So you have a successful family. You have a successful, you know, you're fit, you're in shape. You make an impact with what you do in your business, and you make a really big impact for the city that you obviously care about so much. Maybe walk us through a little bit of like, where did any keys to that? You said you have habits. Mm-hmm. I have bad habits.
No, you have good habits. You and I have some things in common. So I think that service has been in my bones. My family has been of service. They have been active in the community, and that was modeled for me. I believe consistency compounds. Mm-hmm. I think you believe that too. You and I have both a philosophy of like this 0 hour in the morning. You and I are up before other people are awake.
Yeah, I get up. Well, today I got up at 3:15, which is like my goal. Occasionally I sleep until 4 if it's been a rough night. But yeah, I get up early. What time do you get up and what's your morning routine look like?
I get up at 4:32 because getting up at 4:30 would just be crazy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's just nuts. So 4:30, I'm at the gym by 5. I'm there till about 6:30. Probably some of the similar things that you do.
And you work out hard. You go to one of those gyms where they work you hard.
Well, I do, but I'm getting older, and so I realize that it's not necessarily about like that brutal workout anymore, but it is about lifting and a lot of steps in the day. And then, so that's what I do. And I believe, I will tell you, it's never easy for me getting up early. It's always a struggle every morning, but I will regret it if I don't go. And that really sets my day. So I get up and I do several things around the house, even that's unloading the dishwasher or the laundry or just these things to wake up.
You do that at like 4:32 in the morning?
Yes. I do all those things so that it helps me wake up. That's a secret. I am at the gym and I love pull-ups. I love the monkey bars.
Ooh, we should do like a little pull-up contest one of these days.
I do have a pull-up bar.
I don't, Scott. Scott and I talked about hanging one up there because...
Oh, we could hang from that railing maybe.
I actually did a bunch today. I was exhausted.
How many can you do?
Well, I'd say we do kipping pull-ups. This is not strict pull-ups, so I could probably do about 30.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah,
that's
but really they're good. Kipping. That's where you kind of lurch yourself.
Yeah, you get
over
a little momentum.
Yeah, yeah. So strict, maybe 10, 15, I don't know.
Yeah. I just, you know, I say these things about like getting up early because I really believe like that's a differentiator in life. I already feel like I'm productive. I've done a few things around the house. I get home from the gym, start on a little bit of work, kids off to school. We'll try to get in a few steps and then start my day.
Do you feel like doing that, obviously you gain time because you started earlier. So you kind of, you get this extra hour or two. Most people are getting up, let's say at 7:30 or 8. You're getting up, you know, 2 or 3 hours before that. So you gain that time because you're immediately productive. So when I get up, I go into this sort of meditative, you know, state so that I can get my mind right before I do the gym. So it's kind of interesting how you're immediately productive and I'm sort of productive in my own way.
Exactly. It's the same, but different. And I would say nobody's trying to call me at 5 a.m. You know, my phone isn't going, usually email's not going yet. So it's I think it's a secret for me to feel like I'm a little bit ahead of my day because otherwise I run out of the window of things to do because then I get busy with my day balancing between council duties, my work duties, life. And then after work, you know, it's usually kids, dinner, you know, all the things that everyone else is doing. And then a downfall might be that I am usually sleepy by 9:30
I know.
So.
I go to bed pretty early. So yeah, it's
a little boring.
I'm the party pooper.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Hey, I'll party before 9 o'clock.
My son's says it's the Irish goodbye because I'm like sneaking out of whatever event I'm
in. Like, where's dad?
Don't say goodbye to everybody because I'm embarrassed that I'm leaving so early.
Yeah. But by the time they know you're gone, you've like already probably gained a half hour.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm in wind down mode.
So okay. I really feel good about being able to do that.
I didn't know that was the case. I knew you were had a fitness routine, but I didn't realize it was such an early morning thing. Has that been going on like your entire life?
It started really when I started my own business, so almost 15 years ago, because otherwise the day just gets away from me. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I just feel like it helps keep me grounded and keeps me doing okay up here. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what it's about, right? Like the physical or the strength that you get is wonderful, but you can't substitute for how good you feel.
Yeah. My biggest battle is with myself, right? Me versus me facing procrastination and doubts and, you know, all the other uncertainties that come with life. And a good workout takes all that away. You get done with that workout and you're starting from scratch.
Yep.
And sometimes I can do that through a good meditation session or like, you know, just shutting everything down and, you know, before I hit the gym, that's actually my goal. So
It's like medicine, right? Yep. So cheaper than therapy.
Okay. So what's your biggest obstacle in terms of getting out of your own way? What's the weakness?
Probably just maybe fear or self-doubt, but you have to push through those. You know, if you were to never take a risk or be paralyzed every time that you felt scared about something, we would never do anything. I mean, that's where the rewards are, is where the risks are. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I'm a gut, you know, intuitive person. So if it doesn't feel right, it doesn't sit right, I don't do it. But I feel like it has steered me right all these years.
Yeah. You know, confidence is so fragile. You know, we get this, like, I can do this and I'm going to start, but then you have these doubts. Sometimes it's right away. Sometimes it's when there's a tough time. So you said push through it. How do you protect your confidence besides just pushing through it? Is there anything that you do in terms of getting your mind right to keep you confident and pushing through?
I go back to, you know, when you love what you do or you're passionate about something, that comes through. And if you're not, people will sense it, that it's not genuine. And I don't know, maybe this comes with age, but sometimes I just don't give a rip. But you know what people feel like? I know that I'm a good person. I know that, you know, there's some people that don't like sunshine and don't like ice cream. You know, I'm not for everybody and everybody's not for me. Like, you have to be able to accept that too, right? But, you know, being on the city council sometimes and as a business owner, you know, we're not always making decisions that everyone is going to love, but that's okay too. We can disagree and still be okay. And, you know, maybe about being a leader is that you sometimes do have to make tough decisions and that you are at the tip of the arrow, and that's okay too.
Yeah.
And failure's okay, right? They say, you know, fail fast. If you're going to do it, fail fast. I was raised like failure is really a horrible thing and it's a sign of weakness, and it's really not. It's okay to fail. And that's really hard. I don't know if that's hard for you to wrap your brain around, but it's hard sometimes for me to wrap my brain around it. But failure means that you're just not on the right path. You're not where you're supposed to be in life. That's what I feel like that is telling you.
My wife says I fail all the time and I hate it, but it's true. I think that's how we learn. Failure is a little course correction here and there. But as a council member, you're dealing with a lot of people's lives, right? You're affecting a lot of people's lives with the kind of decisions that you make as a council member. And in some of these cases, you're making a decision that somebody won't like, or maybe some group of people won't like, and then another group of people, they like it. How do you deal with, I guess, that anxiety of, I've got some really important people here that really think that I'm making a bad decision?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not, it's never comfortable. Mm-hmm. I feel like I have to do my research, and at the end of the day, I have to make decisions that I feel are in the best interest of the community. Being on the city council, we are in charge. We vote on a budget that's almost $1 billion. And the city's budget really reflects all of the priorities that the city has in terms of where our parks, our public safety, our roads, our infrastructure, our utilities. So our budget, I think, reflects our priorities. And, you know, like you said, half the people are going to be upset at you and half the people are going to love it. And I've learned that some of the small things become really big. And then vice versa, right? You know, we will, our budget process is year round. And when we vote on it, there might not be anybody in the audience. But then the tiniest thing that's perceived to be really small then becomes really big and can get blown up. So I feel like everything that we do is under a microscope. And it should be. I mean, that we're doing the city's business in public. Really?
I remember watching city council meetings when my wife was the HR director for the city of Roseville, and thinking to myself, you know, there's this line of people that want to crybaby about the smallest things, and you have to sit through this waste of time because everybody gets a right to share their voice.
They do. They get 3 minutes.
So do you guys, as a council, do you have like, obviously there are the usual suspects that do that. I don't know if they still, it's probably different ones than when I was watching them.
But do
you have like a code word for those people?
We don't. Honestly, we don't. Our job, that is a part of this public process, is they do get 3 minutes. They do get to come and share whatever is on their mind. And we agree or disagree with them, but that is not a point in time where we have a dialogue about it. We just say thank you for your comment and move on.
Well, on those, one of the things about the council meetings is they can go late at night. And you get up early. What the day after a council meeting, do you ever like take a day off?
Well, sometimes I do. I'm probably in the gym five, six days and then run. I don't want to be a crybaby the next morning, right? I had a late night. Like, so what? Get up and do it.
You know what I started doing is taking like a 20-minute nap. Oh. Like if I have one of those, like, oh, I am just beat. You know what? I'm not going to feel ashamed. I would have been, when I was your age, I would have felt ashamed that I was taking a nap in the middle of the day. Now it's like, you know what? I'm doing it because I'll be better afterwards. So
I'll look forward to that. I'm a terrible napper because then I don't want to get up.
Oh, yeah.
It does not work for me yet.
Getting up for a second. But then afterwards, you're like, oh, I'm glad I did that. Okay, so I'm going to backtrack a little bit because you're obviously you have this fitness thing. We talked about you personally and kind of get into your mindset, but you built an incredible family. Your husband's a stud, your kids, you've got the twin seniors in high school that are very driven and they're going places. Oh, that doesn't happen by accident.
Yeah, I mean, I cannot believe that they are going to be graduating. They're boy-girl twins. They're both athletes. And you have grown kids and grandkids now. You just wonder where the time went. Mm-hmm. And I will say that probably like most parents, we've just modeled really hard work for them, that there's no shortcuts. Mm-hmm. You know, Tony runs Roseville Toyota. It is a pressure cooker of a business at times. He's been there a long time. He's a hard worker. We're both hard workers. And, you know, we always tell our kids, you know, we want to spoil our kids without them acting spoiled. You know, I'm not sure how that works.
Yeah.
But I'm super proud of them. And, you know, they're getting ready to spread their wings and hopefully, you know, head off on a path that works for them. And
So they have dreams in athletics. I know that, but like around the family dinner table or when you have those family discussions, are there times when they're just using their imagination and sharing their aspirations?
For sure. You know, in fact, I saw a posting that one of the colleges picked up on my daughter and it said, she was describing herself and that she wants to go into public relations and she loves to hike. And I thought, that sounds
just
like me,
mommy.
Doesn't it? Yeah. So, you know, they pay attention. They pay attention to, they pick up on everything, right? Kids do. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we have been able to model that really nothing comes easy and that you are not owed anything. And that you have to give back or put in those deposits before you can take a withdrawal. And, you know, I don't want for them to ever have their hand out. I want for them to be of service. And one of the things that my dad's taught me and I try to pass on is around, you know, always leaving things better than you found it. So in 2 years, I'll be wrapping up 8 years on the council. And, you know, I hope that someone else is able to serve or take, you know, coming after us and just move the ball even farther down the field. So we just do the best that we can. And I hope the same is true for my kids that, you know, ultimately you just have to be good people.
Yeah. Well, your dad was a local entrepreneur, Roseville entrepreneur.
Yes.
Owned his own business, respected. And he was probably on the Chamber of Commerce and
all the different
little things where you give back to the community.
For sure. Yep. Yeah. So you remember back in the day, you know, my parents had a toy store back when you used to go to a toy store to buy your toys.
Yes.
And then my mom started her own business and they had successful businesses for a long time. And that's what was modeled for me too. I have worked in corporate environments and I was in the Navy and worked in county government, but ultimately my goal was to open my own business. And I did that almost 15 years ago. So, you know, I have a PR firm and I really love what we do and how people read their messages and get their news and pick up on marketing and messaging is completely different. It changes all the time, but completely different than it was 15 years ago.
Well, I could look at your life a little bit and, like you had big shoes to fill because your parents were successful and you know, gave back to the community, made an impact. And then now your kids moving forward to see what you do and what your husband does, what Tony does. It's like they have big shoes to fill. And do they ever express?
No.
They don't.
They think we're
piece
ridiculous.
Of cake. We got this. Yeah.
No, they're like other kids. I mean, they think we're ridiculous parents at times. And and hover too much. And we don't know anything at this point. I mean, it's their typical, we were all there, right? Typical teenagers, your parents don't know anything. And sometimes we don't, you know, we're just doing the best that we can. And, you know, for Tony and I, there have been, you know, successes along the way, but absolutely failures too. I mean, not everything's a home run. I mean, we strike out too.
What mistakes have you made with your kids?
Gosh, not holding them accountable.
Mm.
Maybe too much of a softy. Mm-hmm. I tell them sometimes there's going to be a consequence, and then
it was a threat.
And then I'll say, you know, because you know there'll be a consequence for that. I'll say, and then they'll say, "What is it?" And I'll say, "I'll let you know." And then they kind of freak out for a little while, and then you know, so probably follow through.
Yeah. Well, it's a challenging thing to want your kids to have everything and all the happiness, but yet you have to be either the police officer or the judge and jury. You know, you have to put these guidelines on that might be a little stricter than what they want.
Absolutely. And you know, it doesn't mean anything if you don't earn it, right? It's always better if you spend somebody else's money, you know, things like that. So, you know, I think about that for everybody, is that if you don't earn it, you really don't value it. Mm-hmm. If it's easy, you know, easy come, easy go. That is so true, right? So that's the dilemma that I think that we live in this community, is that we might have means to be able to, you know, buy them a new pair of shoes or maybe take them on a vacation, you know? But you and I growing up, you know, we were very, you know, working class people, and we were lucky to be able to go and buy a pair of shoes or ever go on a vacation, right? Like, but that's not the world that our kids live in, with these, you know, cell phones and instant gratification, and you know, you see what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, the world's changed. So you joined the Navy, and thank you for your service. And so you have this, like my son being in the Marine Corps, he's out now, but he has this worldview that it's sort of hard for me to put myself in his shoes at some level, but you know, you talk about it's just not the same world that it was, and at some level, it's, you know, I feel like we've maybe we have softened as a society a little bit. Are you faced with some of that same view?
Right.
Our parents probably said that about us too. It's like, you guys are softer than what we had it, but. But still, it feels like we have softened up as a nation, and maybe even some of the things that you thought were, you know, your mission to help protect, is some of those things deteriorated at some level.
Right. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And I think we handicap them by doing too much for them, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't help them. We think, you know, maybe it's helping us, but you know, it doesn't help them.
Yeah. 100%. Okay, so we talked about you, fitness, and getting your mindset right. We talked about a little bit about family. Talked a little bit about the city, but we didn't really talk much about your business. You have this PR company, Market Share PR, and you help people with their messaging and much more than that. But maybe describe that business, and then what are some of the keys to building a successful company?
Mm-hmm. So I say that we help our clients say what they mean. And often clients will want to use too many words. They'll want to bury the lead. They'll want to tell people the entire story and the whole kitchen sink, and how we perceive and intake information. You know, I tell people don't really read, they skim. And so you have to be very strategic about the message that you send if you really want for people to pay attention. Sometimes clients will send us, you know, long memos or websites that have so much copy, and we say, you know, the only person really that's reading that is you. No one's really going to read that anymore. But you have to be able to communicate in a way that is authentic and believable and emotes some sort of emotion from your audience. So Market Share PR, comprehensive PR firm, help with crisis communication, which is something that we actually really love to do, because people...
Oh.
Yeah, I know, it's kind of crazy. But, you know, people are, you know, organizations have people work for them, and people are human and make mistakes, and things happen, and, you know, things don't always go to plan. And so we'll help with crisis communication. How do you message? How do you message to your employees about what happened? How do you message to the media about what happened? Love doing that. Can also help with websites, marketing, collateral, social media, that sort of thing.
Maybe we can talk about crisis communication a little bit. Are there crises that are more common, or are they all different?
They are all different, I will say. Usually it has to deal with some sort of tragedy or misconduct, or that those are usually the themes. But what is has to be consistent in all of them is you have to be able to communicate what you know and or what you can share in a transparent way, because one of the things that we know now is that the audience, the readers, are incredibly cynical. They will pick up on the slightest mistruth or something that doesn't smell right. You know, people are smart. And now, you know, you have social media and there's this back and forth dialogue, and you read it on some of these comments. I mean, people pick up on what isn't true. Mm-hmm. So I tell our clients that, you know, obviously sometimes you, for confidentiality or for legal reasons, you can't share everything, but it's important to share what you know. It's also important to be accurate, accuracy first versus timely. You want to be timely, but you also want to be accurate because you don't want to share misinformation.
Interesting. So I'm just thinking about this. You want to be timely. Are there times when you really need to get out in front of the issue? You know about something, maybe the public doesn't know about it yet. So you want to do it before the world finds out.
Yes. And now everybody has their own news bureau with our phone. So both are really important, but accuracy is more important than being timely, because people will talk and surmise and make assumptions. But if it's your organization, you have to be credible and you have to come out with the facts. And you might even say, you know, and we're gathering all the facts, you know, this is what we know to be what transpired, but you have to know that, you know, with 100% certainty. Otherwise, there goes your credibility too.
I imagine in a crisis situation, I've dealt with it without a PR company, but we want to keep the people we're communicating to calm, right? We don't want them spiraling. And I'm wondering if there's certain, besides just being truthful, are there things that you do to provide sort of a calming effect?
Yes. And I will say some of those things come before the crisis. So before the crisis, people have already made decisions about your brand. So that's why it's important that you are credible to begin with, that you're authentic, that you are, you're communicating, you know, clearly and consistently with your audience. I mean, that will help you out before the crisis. And then during the crisis, I think it's completely fair to humanize it and to be vulnerable. You know, it's okay to say, you know, we are just as upset about, you know, what transpired. As soon as we have more information, we will share it. You can say things like, we're working with local law enforcement, you know, while we're gathering facts. You know, you can reassure your audience, you know, what your priorities are. You know, if it comes to public safety, you know, public safety always comes first. You know, the safety of staff and students always comes first. I mean, those you want to be able to convey.
Mm-hmm. You ever find yourself, I know I do this because I have security camera business, and I've had security camera businesses for the last 20 plus years. When I see a security camera, I'll look at it and see if it isn't one of our cameras, you know, that type of thing goes through my head. So when you hear about somebody, messaging a crisis, you probably judge it or try to take an objective view to, did they do a good job? What could they have done differently? And I'm thinking about the crises that we just had with the fires in Southern California, major crisis for a lot of people. And it ended up getting politicized, and maybe that's unavoidable, but what did you think of the messaging, generally speaking, coming out of that? Do you have a sense? Do you feel like you got a good look at that?
I feel like there was a lot of organizations that were putting out information. You know, I think that it was communicated with empathy, right? Ways that you can be able to help. There was a lot of finger pointing. Mm-hmm. But I think organizations that can communicate ways that people can help, what they're doing to stop, if they're, you know, we had organizations from all over the state and country that came to their aid, and that's always helpful. But you're right on, sometimes things can go awry and then they start becoming, you know, political, you know, politically batted around.
Yeah. Okay. Without maybe any name, you can name names if you want to, but can you give me an example of one that is like, oh, that was an interesting one that you worked on? You're like, oh, you helped this person out or this company?
You know,
without using the
name?
There's
been some, you know, murders of, you know, employees who murder their family was one that comes to mind. I mean,
employees that murdered their family.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, you think of the worst, but.
And so you're messaging it from the company.
Company's perspective to employees and also to the media.
Okay, so let's say I had a restaurant or bar and one of my servers murdered someone in their family or something like that. And then you have to message, hey, that person's been serving me cocktails for the last, you know, 2 years.
Yes. Or you have to say to your employees that, you know, maybe this person will no longer be working there. You know, obviously you can't give away too much information. People can surmise. But yeah, I mean, we've worked on some really unfortunate situations, usually with death. Sometimes we have a client who had two deaths in their organization, not by any fault of their own, a care home. And so you're dealing with family, which is really sensitive. You're dealing with the public, and then you have your employees of a, you know, care home. So yeah. And you, I think, just showing some empathy and some humanity in there is really important.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. I would imagine too, if you have somebody that does something that most people would think is horrific or bad, and they're the face of the brand to some extent, like the owner of the company, or, you know, maybe they have a podcast. If I did something bad, right, and got caught, like those, that could be highly destructive. When you're helping people with their brand, what's your thoughts on people putting themselves out as like a personal brand for their company? Is that dangerous?
No, I don't think it's dangerous. I mean, we've seen examples of this in the Sacramento region where it didn't go well and, you know, companies folded because of some unfortunate behavior of its leaders. So, you know, and you even see that with things that get named in our community, right? Like you name a school after, you know, Thomas Jefferson or George Washington, you know, things like that. And then, you know, we're part of a cancel culture that, so you do have to be aware of that your name is your brand, and people are human, and mistakes happen. So you know, sometimes a brand is all that you have when you're just starting out. You know, often people start their own business and they name the business after them because that might be all that they have, or, you know, what people know is to be their brand, and so they'll name the company after them. I did that when I first started out, because that, you know, people knew me, and that's what, you know, hopefully you know, helped my business. But as you grow too, you think that you're more than just your name, or the company becomes bigger than just you. And so, you know, then people consider changing it.
Yeah. And so you're thinking about your family too, you've built this great family, and you come from a really strong family. So you guys have a personal brand, if you will. Do you think your kids, I'm kind of circling back to the family a little bit, but do you think your kids have respect for the Bernasconi brand?
Well, they better.
Yeah, I would think so, but yeah.
I hope they do. You know, I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, if people see my, well, what's really funny is people see my kids in high in school and they'll say to him, you know, isn't your dad the mayor? but, you know, I do tell them, and you probably do too, and probably all parents should tell the kids, right? Like you are upholding our name, whatever name that represents, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, for sure. You know, serving, you know, in the community, I think people get to know your name and realize, oh, that's so-and-so's son or daughter. Yeah. But I, regardless of that, I would want, obviously we want for our kids to carry themselves in a way that would make us all proud. Yeah. Right? We probably experienced that as kids too, right? You never want to have your kids embarrass you.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Okay. So thinking about communication, and obviously the media has changed, you know, the way we deliver communication is more digital today than it was. Are there certain changes that you're seeing happen that are good for you, let's say in artificial intelligence and the tools that we use in terms of utilizing other people to help us get our message across? Are there tools that you use or that you recommend, or even avenues that are like you got to go this way when you're getting the message out.
Mm-hmm. There are some rules of thumb that we use. We talk about, you know, when you're writing something or sending a message out, you need to pare it down by at least 10%. Mm-hmm. You just cut it. You know, AI is a great starting point for all of us and everything that we do, whether we're writing something or doing, you know, step by step, it definitely helps us. Are you using it?
We use AI for our podcast. We use AI for, you know, our newsletter at some level. It still needs to feel personal, though.
It does. It lacks heart, for sure. It lacks your brand voice, and it's not always accurate. And really, we talk about the audience being smart. Your readers can sniff out in a heartbeat, mm-hmm. you know, when something is used AI. I mean, I feel like I can, too. Yeah. So I think it's a great starting point for all of us. Mm-hmm. But really, we love, just tactically, we love to be able to like bullet out certain points, and then always be able to lead the reader to more information somewhere else. You know, you really want to be succinct and as brief as you can make it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's see, what else do I want to ask you? So you're successful, you're driven. A lot of people aspire to, understand you and how you did, you've done such great things. Are there things that, I guess books or other media that has influenced you and helped shape your perspective or that you might recommend to the rest of us?
I love David Goggins.
David, yes.
I mean, that guy, he's extreme.
A Navy SEAL too. So he's, you know, he's from the same, outfit, if you will.
He's pretty extreme, and I don't know if you follow him.
But, I do.
You know, he's really beat up his body.
Yeah, he doesn't mind going out when he's injured and running in the rain.
I know. He'll run with broken bones.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's insane. So
is it about him besides the Navy? Well, you like that. You like that gritty, that inspires you to see that grittiness or that toughness.
I believe in kind of the no excuses model. Mm-hmm. Do it anyway. It's tough. Do it anyway. You know, get it done.
He's that book, Living with the Navy SEAL, isn't it?
Yes, with Jesse Itzler.
Yes.
He went to live with him. I love that book.
Yeah.
But I just love that philosophy, right? No excuse. If I ask you to do me a favor, I don't want to hear excuses from you about like why it couldn't get done, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to hand you something. Don't hand it back to me. And maybe that's kind of what we do in our work too. Like, people give us problems to solve. Like, don't give it back to me or ask me a million questions. Like, get it done. And I have an appreciation for that.
Do you ever feel like you're, because I have this a little bit at some level, is like, a little of me can go a long way. If I'm serious about something and I'm demanding, that can be intimidating. This sounds funny because my audience doesn't see that side of me, but occasionally I can be a hard ass. And then I usually feel guilty if I'm too demanding.
Yeah, then you have to soften it up a little bit.
I get a turn off on the other side or somebody gets their feelings hurt.
Sometimes, potentially, here's what I think sometimes. There is an art to maybe being direct, right? I think being direct is a form of kindness. Not in a rude way, but if I'm talking to you and I have to deliver something, you know, that you might not want to hear, or something that might be difficult, do you want for me to tell you the truth or do you want me to tiptoe around it for 5 minutes?
I personally want the truth. Do you think our employees probably want the truth too?
I think that it's a form of kindness. Now, not to be mean or brash or, you know, really rough, but I also appreciate if somebody is direct with me or tells me the truth or doesn't really beat around the bush. Because, like, again, like, you can kind of sense when you're being tiptoed around. I think, like, just tell me the truth, you know? So sometimes I feel like maybe I need to soften things up a little bit, maybe for some audiences. I always try to, you know, when someone comes to our council meeting, I always try to be polite and welcoming, because for them, they've never done that before. You talk about public comment, right? They that might be their first and only time that they ever have any action with any city government. And I have had people who tell me before, oh, I came in and I spoke and you were so nice, you know, and that is such a great compliment, because I might not have remembered that interaction because that happened several times a month, but they remembered that, you know? So in those instances, I mean, I think it's always important to be polite and to be kind, but it's also okay to be direct.
Yeah. And everybody has their own style. I think about like Donald Trump, right? We just had an election. You're an elected official, so I know you have a perspective on politics, but even though this is not a political show in any way, but he's been really, really direct. And so his incoming cabinet, they're really, really direct. And you got people crybabying like crazy on the other side. So there are people that don't want to hear it direct.
Yeah. And I think that goes back to like the delivery is so important. Right. And the tone. And I think that that's a whole nother topic that I don't even want to get into, but you know, that's like when you talk about your own personal brand and that you need to have equity in that brand before that equity is going to help you before you start making decisions or speaking, because people have already made up their mind about you.
Yeah, I think that's what's happening in this situation.
Yes.
To a large extent. So, okay, so David Goggins, so Living with the Navy SEALs, one of his books, and you can follow him on like Instagram and probably YouTube and stuff too.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of what else? Give me some more. Feed me some more.
Okay, I really love Sarah Blakely.
Okay. Now that's, what's his name? That's,
yes.
She's related to the Living with the Navy SEAL guy.
Yes. Jesse Itzler. I think she's the first self-made billionaire.
Spanx lady.
Yes. She's incredible. Very smart, very down to earth. And she gives back. She gives back a lot to women. I mean, that's really been her niche. Mm-hmm. And especially coming out and helping women of the business owners from the fires in Southern California. She's helping them. I love her. I'm a big fan of Oprah, huge fan of Oprah and her books. And I do read a lot of self-help books, you know, living the life that you want, creating the life that you want, being accountable, things like that.
How important is manifesting that life? You manifest this great life already? Because I'm one of these people that really likes to dream it. And then even though it might seem a little bit far-fetched or impossible to some people, I think to myself, well, it's going to take a while, but if I don't visualize it, then I'll never start taking those steps. I have to see it to get really excited about it.
I am probably more of a like a doer, or just to go get it, and not maybe not like on the manifesting,
that's how
dreamy
my wife is.
Side yet. You know, I am just, yeah.
Yeah.
Go get it.
You think it has to do with your gender? You think it's because you're a woman, you just know you got to get stuff done and I don't have time to sit around and dream?
I don't know. I don't know that it's a gender thing. We and my firm, like, we work for dreamers. You know, we work for the thinkers that have these great ideas, and then our job is to make it happen. You know, so I think that there are the dreamers, and then there are the worker bees that just, and maybe I fall in like the worker bee category.
Okay. I know you do a lot of work, but obviously
not to say that you don't either. I know that
no,
you
I
do,
don't,
you know,
actually, but I don't do that
okay.
much, but.
But you're like the, you know, the thinker and the dreamer, and then, you know, somebody, but you're not always the implementer, but then you have to find the people that will implement and actually do the work, because you can sit there and dream all day. But ultimately, the work's got to get done. But that's part of the work too, right? You have to have somebody who has those ideas, but the rubber needs to meet the road at some point.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, there's a book called Essentialism. It's The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. Have you ever heard of that book?
No.
And it's not really about dreaming, but it's around like cutting things out of your life that aren't productive and where in taking you to what you want to do with your life. And so it's kind of like the opposite of the 10X rule. It's more about cutting stuff out. But I always feel like if you cut enough stuff out, then there's time to work on the things that are let's call it important, but less urgent. A lot of times, mm-hmm. a lot of the things that we like the dreaming or the communicating with people on a, you know, taking the time to have a deep conversation with somebody about something that's not super pressing at the moment. A lot of times those things get pushed out. And it's because we feel like we don't have enough time in the day to deal with it. And then next thing you know, months, years go by and you haven't really dealt with these really important issues for our happiness. And you know, it's because we haven't cut anything out of our life.
Mm-hmm. Right. We're in this mentality of just being busy, mm-hmm. right? But not really with the right things or majoring in the minors, things like that. And I think that what you have done in this community in terms of in the entrepreneur space, the investor space, the dreaming space, you have created a safe, sustainable, innovative place for people to go to implement, you know, what their dreams are, you know, when it comes to tech and innovation or healthcare or, you know, our future. And you've really made a great name for yourself in Roseville and beyond in the region.
Thank you. And it's really been a fun, almost like an experiment, right? Start the show without really a clear vision. But now we have that. We want to build a backyard advantage. And one of the things I always knew is nobody builds a truly great company alone. And it's true when you're trying to build something like the Backyard Advantage or the Growth Factory or, you know, something else that's maybe a little bit bigger than you, a lot bigger than you, you need to get the right people in your life. And so my teammates and obviously the leadership, you and the leadership of the city and other civic leaders and corporations and investors have locked arms with us in this effort. So it really feels like it's almost takes me back to high school a little bit. I was the guy that threw the parties, right? Throw a party that people love to come to. And it's like, oh, let's figure out a way to throw a party around, you know, building businesses and making this a great place to grow a business. And but for sure, one person doesn't make a party mm-hmm, good. Mm-hmm.
I think that is how you know that you're in the right space because you're having a really good time and it's authentic to you, right? Like this doesn't feel like it's work or a chore. I'm sure you feel like it's an honor that you get to do this. And that's how you know that you're in the right space. And if you didn't feel this way, people would know it. But that is what you are known for is taking a risk, taking these calculated risks, hearing people out about what their idea is. You know, you do a lot at the Growth Factory around in the Venture Lab around even helping students come up with their ideas. You know, the foodie, the mm-hmm. food tech space. And, you know, you make it a safe but yet really productive and viable space to grow these businesses.
Yeah, it's
that's
been
awesome.
Really well. Thank you. I you agree filled with you. A gap. It's been very fun and rewarding for me to be around imaginative, driven people. I feel like it keeps me young to be around those people, and if I can help a little bit mm-hmm. or provide the environment where we all help, it feels good, but for me, it is fun. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you noticing that.
Absolutely. And you're not just planning for the future. I mean, you're building it. You're talking to people whose jobs we haven't even thought of yet or ideas we haven't mm-hmm. even thought of yet. And that's where we're headed.
Yeah. It's the world is changing so fast. And quit, you know, thank you for the compliments, but, we have a lot in common, as you said, and you know you've done tremendous things with your life, with the city of Roseville didn't become, you guys are, where are you ranked? I know the city of Roseville's got like rankings of like super high, maybe number one.
Well, it depends on what the category okay. is, but the city's received accolades in terms of affordability in California, best places to raise a family, safety, places to retire, really tops the list. And that's what people move to Roseville because of the good schools and the safety, and then they stay because of the incredible community. It's we're not just growing, we're really thriving.
And I think you know my personal connection to Roseville. You talked about us having a lot in common and growing up there. And I think you know this too, but my audience may not. So when my wife turned 50, she wanted to do 50 things that she had never done before. And so, you know, we went and saw Times Square, bought the ball drop in Times Square on New Year's Eve. You know, we did all kinds of things together. She did a lot of things without me. But one of the things that she wanted to do was go buy, get our funerals planned out. I'm like, you're 50. I'm 2 years older. We're, you know, why? Okay. So we went and I'm going to be buried in Roseville. We bought the
at the cemetery.
Yeah, right over by the there's like a football coaching area over where all the football coaches.
I know,
are.
Where that is.
So I'm going to be right over there unless somebody changes it on me. That's the plan. So we bought a little bit of real estate there in Roseville Cemetery. So I'll end up there.
You were born in Roseville?
I was born in Japan, but my kids were born in Roseville.
Okay.
I have the fact. So I grew up there. We moved there when I was a baby. My dad got out of the Air Force and went back to, cause he had gone to Roseville High School. But one thing that's kind of interesting is that we have the Roseville Hospital flagpole and we just planted it. I just, posted something on Instagram the other day. It was on Trump's, inauguration day. It was January 20th. We put an American flag along Interstate 80 I live in Loomis now, but it's hard to see from the road, but there's a flag along Interstate 80 in Loomis, kind of in between Horseshoe Bar and King Road. And it's probably it's pretty far off the freeway. But if you look when you go by, you can see it. And then we're going to put, because we own property that goes up to the freeway, we're going to put a billboard. Scott over here is designing it. A billboard for Ashley. She was Realtor of the Year, my daughter Ashley. Realtor of the Year in 2024.
Ashley.
So she'll do a little billboard for her and you'll see this. It'll be closer to the freeway. We couldn't put the flag close to the freeway because there's power lines or something. Anyway, that's my connection to Roseville. One of my connections that I always want to keep that Roseville close to me. So we did some work over at the hospital when they were making it, whatever it is,
yes.
U-Haul or whatever.
Yes.
My concrete company did some work. So they gave us the flagpole. My
that's
buddy
very
Garrison.
Cool.
And there's like always a special place in my heart for Roseville.
Yeah, I know. It's practically your hometown. Yeah. It is your hometown.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So, okay. So what did I not ask you? What else do... what were you expecting? I know this conversation, when we first started talking, you're like,
where are we
what
going?
Am I doing here? Yeah, where are we going with this? So what did I not ask you? Do you have any messaging that you'd like to give for either your business, your family, the city?
I think we have talked about me enough. I will just say that I am super thankful that you asked me to be on the show. I'm super thankful to be able to serve the city, live here, raise my family here, and... I think every day just starting with gratitude is really important.
Love it. Well, I'm appreciative that you're here.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage. And of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.